Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, guys and girls. The program you are about to hear will be both fun and educational, but it is not a substitute for medical advice. Although we are doctors, we are not your doctors.
Hello, and welcome to Travel Medicine. As always, I'm your friendly neighborhood internal medicine doc, Dr. J.
Hey, guys. Dr. Santosh here, pediatric infectious disease doc, researcher, after dark.
Ooh, and hey, it's me, Dr. Ward. I'm still hiding in my bunker, your ER doc, shaking my booty.
Bunker down.
We'll have to wait till February where you can pop out of your bunker and tell us if there's 6 more weeks of winter.
Only 6 more weeks of COVID?
Yeah, only if I get my vaccine. Yes.
Shittiest groundhog ever. If he sees a shadow, there's 6 more weeks of COVID.
It's going to be more than 6 weeks. I can tell you that already.
At this point, yeah. Yes. But when we cross like February and March, I'm hopeful. Cautiously.
Well, that's good. I like to hear that positive Christmas spirit, Santosh.
Yeah. I'm glad you're into or, like, my positive Christmas
or
spirit.
Or your Hanukkah hope. Whatever.
You have to put more of a chah into that line. It's a Hanukkah hope.
Okay, your Hanukkah hope.
Or your Kwanzaa. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't touch that one. I have no clue.
Yeah.
Your charisma? I don't know. That does help us into a great, yet terrible, segue of it's time for the holiday episode.
Woohoo! Holiday!
So, previously, we have diagnosed the 12 days of Christmas. A lot of birds. Lots and lots of birds.
Oh, yeah. There are so many.
Were they all avian flu, duck flu?
Swans, birds, partridges.
And we also took a time to dive into diagnosing the Grinch and Tiny Tim. So I thought this year we would take a look at another old story. One that starts with a lonely old man who sits at home on Christmas Eve and then has a series of unexpected visitors. Restless spirit of his long-dead partner, followed by the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. By morning, he's been transformed into an icon of exuberant celebration.
Yay!
Okay, yeah. He's all happy at the end of it, weirdly so, and just throws his money around.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yeah, the best Halloween ghost story ever, A Christmas Carol. And of course, I'm talking about Ebenezer Scrooge. Of course, You could also view this through a slightly different lens. Ward, what if the paramedics bring you somebody and...
Meth. It's meth.
Oh. All right. Well, okay. Let's say the paramedics bring you somebody else and they describe an elderly man with no known medical problems, according to neighbors. Nobody really knows him that well. Has a sudden change in mental status characterized by confusion and vivid hallucinations involving friends and relatives that leave him in a state of trembling mania and euphoria.
Would you say, was that Victorian times, or do you think that was a little bit earlier? If it was Victorian times, then the differential diagnosis is very different from what we have today. I mean, today it's meth again, and possibly a urinary tract infection.
All right, and I'm going to tell you, it's not meth. This didn't take place in Hawaii. It was London.
Jeez.
And then, you know, there could be medical causes, infectious causes, anatomical causes, and, you know, such as strokes, aneurysms, so on and so forth. And then I would say at the top of any good ER doc's differential diagnoses would be toxicology, because that is a very frequent cause of altered mentation.
Before we do toxic, we should go through, what's that acronym that you use for like the big causes of altered mentation? So it's like glucose, oxygen. What are the other ones? Like this, it's automatic stuff, right? If a person's like kind of out.
Those are metabolic and I don't know an acronym for it.
I thought there was like a quick acronym for like, check these things if your patient, you know, looks kind of out of it. So yeah,
I remember this.
Almost give automatic me a second. For all of us now.
No, okay. No. It's AEIOU tips.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But then what do you do for G for glucose? Or is it insulin?
It's AEIOU tips. Wait, no. Okay, all right.
Maybe S for sugar tips.
Hold on. Alcohol.
Uh-huh.
Epilepsy.
Uh-huh. And
insulin. Glucose is insulin.
Insulin, that's the one. Insulin.
Well, okay, let's reveal the rest of the puzzle, Vanna.
I just pulled it up on Wikipedia, and it looks
oxygen for $500.
Yeah. Okay. A is alcohol or abusive substances and acidosis. So that would be your tox, most of all. They decided to put ecstasy in there. Environmental, epilepsy, electrolytes, encephalopathy, and endocrine disease. Infection for I, overdose or oxygen deficiency. U is underdose or uremia.
I haven't had enough meth.
No, an insufficient dose of your prescribed medications, as in the person has dementia and they haven't been taking their anti-dementia meds. T is trauma tumor. I is insulin. P is psychogenic and poisons. There's poison. And then S is stroke and shock.
Did you use insulin twice? I feel like...
Mm-hmm. I think the other one's infection. Insulin infection. And infection.
Yeah. There's an I for infection and an I for insulin. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So now we've got this elderly man. And
I'm so happy that you remembered AEIOU tips.
I don't know why. I couldn't remember what most of it stood for.
There's no way I would have been able to get this on Google if you hadn't remembered AEIOU tips.
Well, there's also mud piles.
Josh and I do this so frequently that it's almost like second nature to us. Like the AEIOU tips, kind of, we don't need it. It just kind of comes across.
Yeah. You run your list much more efficiently than have to go through a silly mnemonic. But yeah.
We all had to learn somehow. But to the point from tips, Scrooge and therefore Dickens make an interesting point. What if it's just something, you know, he ate? So, you know, certainly Scrooge has his own diagnosis. He tells Marley's ghost, you may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are.
Oh, burn.
Served. You just got served, Bob Marley's ghost.
So Bob Marley.
He was Jacob. Incorrect. None
Jacob.
Of these things.
Oh, Jacob Marley. Sorry.
Bob Marley would have been a very different night.
Yeah, that would have been so chill. Like he would have every little thing gonna be all right.
Okay. So
okay, Scrooge is wrong. None of these things could cause you to conjure up your ex-best friend's ghost.
Let's say, looking, as you mentioned, at Victorian times and ignoring the almost certain arsenic in the wallpaper, what if it were really something he ate? Even though I suspect neither one of us sees it all that often, Ward, ergotism, or poisoning from a mold that tends to grow on damp rye, wheat, barley, oats, has been known to cause hallucination and confusion since, almost like the Dark Ages. I don't know. Have you seen any cases of ergo poisoning? Or, if not, are you familiar with ergotamines?
I have not seen any cases of ergo poisoning in my over 10 years of practice. Partly because ergo poisoning, I mean, like, rye that's been sitting around and molding is not a thing anymore, at least not in the United States. And
yeah,
very few people eat rye anyways nowadays. So that's not really a thing. And, you know, but ergotamine is also a medication that we're not using that often anymore for migraines. It's wonderful because it causes vasoconstriction, which is thought of as the cause for migraines. Or, you know, dilated vessels are thought to be the cause of migraines. So vasoconstriction addresses that issue. But nowadays we have, you know, Imitrex, other things that probably have a better safety profile.
Sure. But during the Middle Ages, bakers were probably not held to quite the same standard. So there could be consumption of contaminated rye. Now, Scrooge lives alone, so there's no one else to compare in his house. So this would be a toxicology one. But in excess, ergotamines, which are derived from that same ergo fungus.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point it transitioned from poison to pill, but in excess they can lead to hallucinations, seizures and spasms, paresthesias, mania, and even psychotic breaks. All of which could describe seeing your dead partner's ghost, feeling chills in the room, having sudden changes in mood, like, oh, I can't bear to see this complete and total tiny stranger die, to now I love everybody because otherwise no one will be at my funeral.
Well, can I say so that's after Scrooge woke up, right?
Mm-hmm.
When he became a belly.
Was, yes.
But while he was seeing things that nobody else could see, and hearing things that nobody else could, I don't know if anybody else could see the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future, as well as Bob Marley. Or I keep calling Bob Marley. Yeah. Jacob Marley.
I'm sorry. I screwed us all up.
It kind of reminds me of a like an acid trip or a mushroom trip, where you know your hallucinations and your storyline could turn on a dime, and it sits on a knife's edge because it kind of starts out kind of happy, right? He was kind of happy to see Jacob Marley. He was kind of happy to see his old flame in, conjured up by the ghost of Christmas past. It was kind of happy, right? And then slowly the trip turns darker and darker and darker.
Funny you should mention that, because lysergic acid is one of the compounds found in ergo poisoning.
Oh, weird. So the fungus makes it.
Yeah, so it's not the full, I guess, synthesized version of the drug that the kids are selling on the streets, but it does share a couple compounds with it, which is what causes the hallucinations. So again, in the modern day, we have the FDA, so rye is rarely contaminated. The few cases that do come up are usually seen in more rural areas and after heavy rains or flooding. So a few cases came up, I believe, around the time of Hurricane Katrina. And a few always show up around hurricanes because you do get spoiled grain.
Gotcha.
And you see either high doses or when moderate doses that wouldn't be noticed interact with drugs like erythromycin. For you, Santosh, alkaloids can pass in the pediatric population. They can pass from lactation from mother to child. So infants can get ergotism and go tripping on breast milk.
It could. Ooh. That's creepy. So this would have been much more common than if there is like a blight. If the fungus shows up on the barley or the rye or whatever it is, but like the people didn't have anything else to eat. Like they couldn't necessarily get rid of it or anything, but you know, they said, all right, well, you know, I guess we got to eat it or we'll die from starvation. So either like convulsions, paralysis, and crazy hallucinations and maybe death, or like certain death. So in that case, definitely the poor babies would have had the fallout from that.
The timing kind of works for a hallucinogen as well, right? Because like shrooms or LSD, like LSD lasts a little bit longer, maybe 12 hours. Shrooms, maybe, you know, 4 to 6 hours. That's like a night's sleep. That's about right.
All right. All right.
But again, it never mentioned him consuming anything other than he, what does he say from the food? Beef, mustard, cheese, underdone potato. It sounds like he had a sandwich, perhaps, perhaps from his local deli on rye.
Well, he's got more gravy than of grave. I guess, do you use wheat when you make gravy? You use flour, don't you?
But you can put gravy on like a sandwich. Like a
no.
Yeah, just rolled up bit of beef and gravy, and then you stick it on some bread. But presumably, it's something that he could have come across. Now, would it cause those lasting changes? I guess maybe if it was a deeply spiritual hallucinogenic trip. Because he certainly wouldn't have gone to the doctor to explain it. But let's keep looking. What else is on our differential?
Okay, so you've got poisoning by this thing, ergotamine. Oh, sorry. Cool little nugget I saw while we were talking about ergotamine. I guess ergotamine might have been causing the Salem witchcraft accusations. Because they all, like, they were twitching and convulsing and then hallucinating and stuff. So that could have been the problem out in Salem. Damn.
Well, that would make sense because a bunch of people would get sick from the same grain, you know, grain production.
Yeah.
And yeah, the whole town just got crazy.
Maybe they'll cover it in Hocus Pocus 2.
The return of right. Pocus.
So let's move on from food poisoning. One of the other ones we mentioned was the cardiovascular. So did Scrooge have a stroke?
Oh, yeah. It's entirely possible. There are specific areas that deal with things like imagination, and it would have to be a really specific stroke. But yeah, I suppose you could see colors, shapes, hear voices if you stroked out the right part of your brain.
Well, okay. So let's say in the middle of the brain, there are visual centers that could account for the hallucinations. Then the quality of hallucinations are consistent with, we'll say, post-stroke visions, which are basically little seizures that your brain has following a stroke.
Ooh.
And these can often be described as very vivid in color and usually occur after dark for no reason I was able to find. But like a stroke, these visions came on very suddenly. And again, an abrupt, sudden personality change would be consistent with a stroke depending on what sections of the brain were hit with blood flow.
Before we hit Ebenezer with some TPA, I would say that yes, strokes can cause visual changes as well as personality and speech changes. The things that go against a stroke are usually strokes cause very focal specific changes, like one part of your vision is gone or one part of your speech, such as the ability to speak certain words or part of the way you speak is gone. It generally doesn't change, you know, like basically a crummy person into a better person like that.
Yeah, that would.
What if the focal part was his Christmas spirit?
Well, then you mean anti-Christmas spirit.
Oh, right.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well, we did have, I guess we're going to talk about trauma maybe a little bit later, but we did have Phineas Gage where you took a pretty, you know, nice person, and then you drove a railroad tie through the right part of the brain, and that disinhibited him, making him like kind of cuss and swear and not care about modesty and that kind of a thing. The interesting thing, though, is most of the cortex that we have, the neocortex of the brain, is inhibitory like that. There, I don't know of a lot of things where you can stroke it out or destroy a piece of the brain and get nicer.
Oh, great example, Santosh. Phineas Gage had basically a metal rod that ran through his brain and knocked out a part of the cortex that was inhibitory and responsible for personalities, right? Mm-hmm. Interestingly, strokes don't knock things out that way because they get anatomical parts get knocked out based on vascular tributaries. So like the MCA or the middle cerebral artery gets blocked out and it knocks out a part that's anatomical and specifically in a wedge shape that's like a half of a brain or a quarter of a brain. It doesn't surgically like strike out personality.
Think
centered.
Of it as a stage, and up in the control booth is a guy with a bunch of buttons and levers, and a stroke permanently disables access to some parts of the stage. So maybe now a curtain won't come down or a light won't go on. And maybe you can get somebody in to fix it. That would be the neurologist electrician. Mm-hmm. Or maybe that part of the stage just has to be ignored from now on. That is the closest analogy I can give you for what's going on with a stroke.
But this makes a ton of sense, just like you're saying, Ward, is that you can't knock out a small chunk the way that that railroad tie could because of the distribution of what part of the brain would be taken out. So that kind of specific knockout of like this part of the personality, that wouldn't happen. I totally get it.
It would be a little less likely because it just doesn't fit that pattern. The patterns tend to be more like, you know,
broad, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's a different pattern.
I don't know. What's the personality of a stage?
Depends on the player you're at.
The actor. I think the analogy just fell apart.
All right. So we've ruled out strokes or even TIAs. While they could cause temporary confusion enough to possibly lead to hallucinations, they wouldn't lead to the sort of lasting personality changes that sent him to buy a goose for the Cratchits. What about seizures? Again, post-ictal period, so maybe long enough to buy that goose, but he'd immediately know what he did and fire Cratchit the following day. So probably unlikely. He would end up in a pool of his own urine and drool on the floor rather than running around through past, present, and future.
I agree. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Before we move on to the next one in my differential list, do you guys have any other thoughts on what could have led to some of these changes in Scrooge?
Well, you know, we did say trauma, and we talked about Phineas Gage and this kind of a thing. Ward, what do you think? What do you think about trauma rather than a stroke? So, rather than taking out a wedge of something, like if there was a
maybe Tiny Tim's dad Bob Cratchit was really fed up with it,
just went ahead, just brained him. And then,
maybe it was raining or pouring, and somebody went to bed and bumped his head. Didn't get up till Christmas morning.
So blunt force trauma, I'd be maybe a little less because that would cause, you know, like a hemisphere or, you know, if there was like a subdural bleed or an epidural bleed, you'd have an area of the brain. Again, just like you were saying, Ward, a big swath of brain taken out, but maybe a penetrating injury that we didn't see that would affect the frontal lobe and maybe the
And it doesn't even have to be that severe. A concussion, by definition, can cause personality changes, can cause changes in the way you interpret things. It can even cause the way you sense things. So just even a concussion from Bob Cratchit getting super mad at him for not letting him go home might cause some personality changes, and those changes can last weeks to forever.
Oh, no. That's a long time.
Yeah.
I'll put infection up there. We're in London, so there isn't a lot of encephalopathies that could go around. Like, it's not in a tropical area where you can get a lot of these weird arboviruses and things like that. But if we wanted to have some fun with it, like say he had herpes.
I'm gonna stop you on herpes for just a moment.
Such has been the career. I always get stopped at the herpes, Josh.
I was just trying to think where would this trauma this blunt force trauma have come from in Dickens. And he does mention that Cratchit or some children hits Scrooge with a snowball in a snowball fight. And a hard packed little ball of ice, depending on what the previous night's snowfall was like, could that cause a concussion, Ward? A particularly bad snowball hit?
Of course, especially because Scrooge sounds like he was someone who was elderly. So they're a lot more susceptible to TBIs, traumatic brain injuries.
Okay, so watch those flying snowballs around the old folks' home, kids.
Yeah.
Now, Santosh, back to your herpes.
We now join our field reporter. Back to you, herpes. Yeah, that's what it does. It comes back again. No, if he had HSV, if he had herpes simplex infection, if he had had chicken pox in the past, VZV, this varicella zoster can go to the brain. Herpes simplex could go to the brain. He didn't have enough signs and symptoms of syphilis. But syphilis was a big time. You know, I don't know who would bang. What's his name?
Scrooge. There's a type for everyone.
Scrooge. But neurosyphilis can show up much, much later than the original thing. So it might have been when he was like a young stud.
Oh, come on. What about Bell?
Bell?
Bell was Ebenezer Scrooge's original love interest.
Oh,
they were his Christmas past. Yeah, they were inseparable until Scrooge foreclosed Bell's cottage, according to the Disney version.
The Disney version.
And then Scrooge was cursed and turned into a beast with a bunch of
Cratchit
as a teapot.
No. This is not your fan fiction podcast, Josh. That is Josh's
fan. Me.
Dr. Santosh, can you have a fling with Belle in your 20s or 30s and then later on in your 50s or 60s have neurosyphilis?
So certainly. That's the weird thing about it is it's a little bit like the herpes. Is just when you think it's gone, well, bam, it's back again. Yeah, it can stay latent for a long time. And that secondary syphilis where you have that, you know, a little bit of a flare and then you have a long period of latency, it can be for like a couple of decades before it comes back. It's unusual. More often than not, maybe it's like a few years, like a couple of years before it goes and attacks the brain. But the interesting thing about, HSV would be a lot more acute. And the problem with it is he could technically have a bunch of hallucinations, but it would probably progress and just kill him because herpetic encephalitis is very lethal. Same with VZV. Yeah, except varicella zoster, chicken pox, and if you got like the shingles that went to the brain, that one could attack and take out things like memory, and it could also affect personality very selectively because it likes that little insula part in there. So you could get all giddy and weird. Syphilis, though, it's almost like it pockmarks the brain. It doesn't, you know, it'll hit like little sections. I don't know if y'all remember the show House. In House, there's a woman who caught syphilis and then she started like hitting and chasing after House because she became like kind of hypersexual and, you know, like overly amorous.
Mm-hmm.
So syphilis is actually a pretty good candidate because it wouldn't be so acute and damaging. It would slowly make him deteriorate, which would give him like, grumpy and all this kind of a thing. And then, you know, there could be a point where he goes into like a hallucination because particular like bunch of neurons get knocked out and then he gets all giddy and happy. So yeah, syphilis could definitely be a fun one for this list.
Okay. So we've got, you know, poisoning, food poisoning, which is Scrooge's self-diagnosis from ergotamines. We've got stroke, which we've effectively said really is unlikely. Herpes or some kind of encephalitis, also unlikely. Syphilis is up there. So syphilis and ergotamine. Anything else that you think we're missing before we move on to the big dementia?
Oh, well, I mean, So probably the most common cause for people to have mood swings and sometimes maybe a little bit of delusionary thoughts and things like that would be bipolar disorder, right? Like a mental health crisis. So, in bipolar disorder, sometimes you're down, sometimes you're up, sometimes you're a big old Scrooge, and sometimes you're like, during your manic episode, you could end up, people feel like they can do anything they want and they will spend a lot of money or go out and, you know, buy a new car. And it almost sounds like they're on like cocaine or on upper or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And that can last for days.
So I would say unless – I don't think Dickens gives us enough descriptions of Scrooge's behavior in these wild swings. And he's a little late to be diagnosed for the first time with bipolar disorder. He does have this manic episode, but we get to see, presumably, assuming he's not an unreliable narrator, we get to see Scrooge in his past and in, you know, somewhat in his present. And in neither one of those is he known for having wild mood swings. He's pretty consistently a cranky old grump.
That's correct. This would be very, if someone walked into my ER or was admitted under Dr. Josh, it would be a diagnosis of exclusion to say, oh, this 60-year-old all of a sudden is exhibiting new onset bipolar disorder.
We didn't mention self-poisoning, meaning that, you know, he said, oh, this might be a crumb or a bread or something. But, you know, he could have just gone out, you know, and decided to, like, you know, get some cocaine from around the corner or some heroin or something. And I'm guessing it wasn't cut back then, but, you know, some nice opiates or something could have given him a night like this. They didn't have marijuana in Dickens' time, I don't believe, right? Because they'd have to cross into the New World.
No, they had laudanum and opium. Scrooge would not have smoked opium. He would have, and he has a very Puritan work ethic, so okay. He is unlikely to take any drugs, as he's known for not even consuming alcohol.
Okay.
Again, he's very much a teetotaler and has been ever since he became the Scrooge instead of just young Ebenezer.
Gotcha.
Oh, I'd watch that show. Young Ebenezer.
Young Ebenezer.
Oh, just when he turns? Yeah, that would be a really interesting.
Yeah, it's like it would be like
Breaking Bad, the Christmas edition.
Yeah.
Young Ebenezer. And there you go, Ward. Meth gets involved.
Oh, there you
go. Well, you know, and not just the you know, the fun recreational stuff. Like sometimes anticholinergic poisoning can cause you to be mad as a hatter, red as a beet, and something else.
Dry
as a bone, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if Scrooge weren't in Victorian times, if he were today, antidepressant overdoses such as SSRIs, tricyclics can all cause you to have a different outlook on life, to say the least, and be altered and have hallucinations.
Wow.
Excellent points. But as we mentioned, Scrooge is elderly, so certainly on our differential, I'm not sure how high yet, would be dementia, which is a common cause of mental status in the elderly, and Alzheimer's and other kinds of dementia all tend to be stepwise rather than gradual, meaning you can see small changes or great big drops in one instance rather than a general progression. It's not like you'll see little. You may see little bit, nothing, slight improvement, huge drop. And severely demented patients will at times seem to relive experiences from their past. They'll have conversations with friends and family long dead, you know, even while you're standing in the room. But Alzheimer's isn't the model idea of dementia for this because it's still very rapid. Again, three major hallucinations in one night followed by a complete personality change. However, there is a kind of dementia that Dickens might be the first to diagnose in his time, but we've known about since, I'd say at least the 90s. And that would be Lewy body dementia.
Oh, we've talked about this before.
But symptomatically, this disease is kind of at the intersection of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk originally. Lewy bodies themselves were discovered. Okay, quick history lesson. I can't help myself.
Go.
Lewy bodies were discovered in 1912 by Frederick Lewy, a German pathologist.
All right,
who was
researching Parkinson's disease at Munich University. But he was very humble and simply described these bodies and what they looked like. They were named Louis bodies in 1919 by a Russian pathologist also researching Parkinson's and this disorder, Konstantin Tretiakov. But they weren't linked into dementia. Like, the fact that these bodies showed up in people who were demented wasn't figured out until 1961 by Japanese researcher Okazaki.
Okay.
And it wasn't all put together and called Lewy body dementia and recognized it as a distinct disorder until 1980 by another Japanese researcher.
Neat. I love how that all came together with, you know, these stages of different people with different expertise all adding into the final product there.
Science.
Well, okay, so I mean,
clinically, there's a lot of overlap between the dementias, right? The Lewy bodies, the Alzheimer's. I mean, Parkinson's is a little bit different. That's more of the, yeah, that's a, that has its own separate features. But Lewy body and Alzheimer's has a lot of overlaps. So until they cut the brains and looked under the microscope, you know, people didn't know what the differences were.
Yay for pathology.
Yay.
So let's briefly dive into Dickens and see if we can get a description. And see if we can get a description of him and what you can tell me, if anything, that would lend credence to any of our differentials. All right, kids, medicine at work behind the scenes.
I only know the Scrooge McDuck version because I haven't read the Dickens version in a long, long time. It is one of my favorite stories.
Yeah. All right, well, here's just a brief excerpt from early in the novel. All right. Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Hard and sharp as flint, from which no steel had ever struck out generous fire. Secret and self-contained and solitary as an oyster. The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek and stiffened his gait, made his eyes red, his thin lips blue, and spoke out shrewdly in his grating voice. A rime was on his head and eyebrows and his wiry chin. He carried his own low temperature about with him. He iced his office in the dog days and didn't thaw it one degree at Christmas. So that's the very first introduction we ever get to Scrooge.
Wow.
What's your picture of him? What are you thinking, both clinically, personally? Where do you go?
I'm going to hold off a little bit because I'm...
I still think mental health, he had some issues. I mean, whatever else that might be going on, he sounds a little depressed, and he sounds like he had some relationship issues because he seems to be a loner, and maybe by choice, maybe not entirely by choice. And he just had the opposite of what you would call a sunny disposition.
Now,
yeah, putting it lightly.
Santosh, you have any thoughts?
In terms of outside of your just like environmental factors, right? So how he was raised, the values that he was given, and, you know, these kind of things is what I always come around to as a pediatrician, because usually the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. So that's some of the first things that I come up with when I hear about that particular description is like, what was his family life like? What did mom and dad do? That kind of thing.
I'm cherry picking a little bit here, but some of the words used to portray Scrooge, you could also apply to somebody with Parkinson's, and we'll talk about how Lewy body dementia intersects with that. But he's expressionless. He's rigid. He's nearly immobile. The cold within him froze his old features, stiffened his gait. He also has a tremor, you know, just for completeness sake. All of this is consistent with Parkinson's. Now, when you start throwing in the hallucinations, we think of Lewy body dementia, which unfortunately can only be diagnosed post-mortem. But onset for Lewy body dementia usually is after 50, and that's... Scrooge seems like he would be around at least his 50s, given average life expectancy for the time. Now, really fascinating, and I don't know if you guys knew this, hallucinations tend to occur really early in the disease. And when I say early, I mean about 15 years before the cognitive deficits, the dementia aspect.
Oh, so before, much, much before they start getting kind of incapacitated is what you're saying.
Right. You just start seeing things. Okay. Oh. So that's, there's our hallucinations of ghosts, but that's still a pretty weak case to build on. So let's look at some of the other prodromal symptoms. Prodromal meaning setting on before the clinical diagnosis of the disease.
Okay.
One of the huge ones, REM sleep behavior disorder, RBD, in which normally when you're in REM sleep, you are functionally paralyzed. So you don't swing your arms, fall out of bed, go sleepwalking, you know, make sleep bacon, things like that.
Gotcha.
But people with REM sleep behavior disorder, which includes those with Lewy body dementia, lose that muscle paralysis that normally occurs during sleep and act out their dreams, which may, and those behaviors may include yelling, screaming, crying, laughing, nonviolent flailing, choking, punching, or scratching. So the reported dream enactments are frequently violent and usually involve a theme of being chased or attacked.
Oh, okay. So they're terrified. They're scared.
Yeah, that sounds like a bad trip.
So running from the specter of death or chasing after his lost love through these hallucinations, moving around through past, present, and future while never actually leaving his house. So far, all of this would be covered by a Lewy body dementia, and he's in the right age group. More to your point earlier on concussions, Ward, I know we brought up snowballs, but people with RBD can fall out of bed and injure themselves, which can cause subdural hematomas or concussions. Oh. Just bump your head, fall out of bed, didn't get up in the morning.
Yeah, or he could have fallen the night before and then, you know, his personality started changing even quicker.
You can also see a reduced ability to smell, you know, just because why shouldn't COVID get into the 1800s as well as 2020? and autonomic dysfunction or orthostatic hypotension. So things like constipation, dizziness, and loss of blood pressure causing near likelihood of passing out on standing, all seen with this disease. And that's because just like Alzheimer's, there's these deposits of proteins. And in this case, they're alpha-synuclein deposits. And they start building and collecting in parts of the brain. And depending where they show up, that depends what kind of deficits you'll show. So in order to get an official diagnosis of Lewy body dementia, you need the dementia, the hallucinations, and Parkinson-like features, and then the postmortem is the Lewy bodies. But you make a clinical diagnosis with at least those three.
You make a really good case for Lewy body dementia, but that would change A Christmas Carol from a happy ending to a very, very different, very, very different ending.
Well, let me ask this, Josh. What about the Parkinsonian features that you were talking about? Those precede all of the hallucinations and dementias, or is that timing accurate?
No, so the hallucinations and the sleep behavior disorder tend to come first. Now, a lot of the protein deposits build up near the basal ganglia, which is the same area affected in Parkinson's disease. So that's why you get Parkinsonian features, and you can often treat some of the muscle symptoms or the motor symptoms with Parkinsonian medications, even though this is not Parkinson's disease. So it doesn't reverse it. It may help slow some of the symptoms, but all of this, you know, the prodromal are the sleep disorders, constipation, and dizziness. By the time the dementia sets in, it could be 15 to 20 years later. And once the dementia develops, not to totally take away from your happy ending, Ward, once that dementia develops, people tend to have about 8 to 10 years of living beyond that where they totally shut down. And that's fairly similar with Alzheimer's. So he could have had this change of heart from the hallucinations, things that would have kept up, and you know, he was of an age where he would have been dead in Victorian times before from something like, I don't know, just smoke in the air. bad chimney sweeps.
Yeah. Yay, happy ending after all.
So so his legacy could have still been changed before he died of this dementia. That's my case for the diagnosis of Ebenezer Scrooge. I think we have a pretty good series of differentials, but I'm staking my claim on Lewy body dementia and consulting my neurologist. What do you guys think?
I like it. So far, it lines up. It lines up with age. It lines up with all of the symptoms that are going on so far. I think it folds in all of the symptoms that you're talking about. And yes, you did cherry pick a little bit of the description, but not too much. That was a fairly straightforward look at what Scrooge might have looked like from an outside observer, and then how he kind of deteriorated. We just never saw the aftermath, like what you were talking about, and how it progressed. In terms of my infectious causes, I can make a case for syphilis. Syphilis is called the great mimic because it can copy a lot of signs and symptoms of various disorders, whether it's cancer or tumors, because you get these little gummas on your skin or in bones, or it can mimic osteomyelitis. It can mimic various dementia diseases as it progresses over time. But the lack of maybe like focal neurological symptoms, like there wasn't weakness of one arm or you know, convulsions, things like that at that time, that doesn't quite fit. But I think maybe the only thing I'd throw up against that, maybe close, is the syphilis.
I'm going to stick to the ergotamine because being an ER doc, I just love my tox. And you know what? I think out of all the causes, ergotamine has a possible happy ending because he had a breakthrough through some hallucinations and he saw his life from a different point of view, and maybe he was changed for the better for the rest of his life.
Wow. Okay. So Ward's taking the spiritual trip. I'm headed down the elderly dementia path. Who do you guys think won?
Oh, yeah. I'd love to hear from you guys. I think right now, just all things being equal, I'm going to give it to the dementia.
He's not being forced to say that, but let's hear what you think, home audience. That's it for this week. As always, we love to hear your comments, questions, and feedback. Our theme music is composed by Rachel Leisure. The show is produced by me with a lot of help from Dr. Santosh Ward and friends. If you'd like to support us spiritually, emotionally, or financially, links to do that are in the show notes. Rate and review us wherever quality podcasts are found, including now on Audible. And bonus plug, Ward, you have a brand new podcast starting soon. You want to give a quick plug for it?
RuPaul Drag Race Virgins, two LGBT comedian people in life in general review Drag Race and have fun talking about it. We're also on iTunes and I believe Stitcher. It's coming out soon.
And if you've never seen Drag Race and don't know what it is, well, this is a great place to start because neither does one of the hosts.
There you go. Be a virgin with me.
Yeah. Isn't this like losing your virginity with you kind of thing?
I would only take the analogy so far.
that's him in the corner. That's him in the spotlight watching RuPaul's Drag Race. Until next time, as always, stay safe, wash your hands, wear a mask. And if you're able to get that vaccine, we look forward to hopefully being able to tell you soon. Happy travels.
Bye, guys.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.